The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Now, before I go into what's coming up, an announcement about next week. I have a couple of speaking engagements in the week. Debbie's accompanying me on one of them, not both. But the effect of it is we're going to take the week off, but the podcast isn't going to be off because my daughter, Danielle D'Souza Gill, is going to sit in for me. So this is the first time I've actually got a guest host, happens to be my daughter, who'll be doing the podcast 5 days, all 5 days next week. So check it out. It's going to be great. And now let's come to today. I'm going to draw on the work of investigative reporter John Solomon to show how the Biden regime has been outsourcing its censorship, using intermediaries to communicate instructions to high-tech platforms, all to conceal blatant violations of the First Amendment. Debbie joins me. We're going to talk about a bunch of issues, including Herschel Walker, the Biden-Venezuela prisoner exchange, and I'll offer a surprising answer to the question, who are the happiest people in America? This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
I've long said that there is a real shortage, a real paucity of real investigative reporting occurring on our side, on the right side. The left does a lot of digging to find facts that seem to support their worldview, put it out there, use it to expose people, expose institutions, expose networks and relationships. And sometimes their investigations misfire or backfire. A good example was Russia collusion. But look at the energy and tenacity and persistence with which they push these. Well, I'm happy to say there's a very important investigative report coming out from our side. And I want to give credit to the reporter John Solomon. John Solomon is the key figure in a site called Just the News, justthenews.com. And his latest report focuses on, let's call it, outsourcing censorship. So what do we mean by this? Well, what we mean is that you've got a Biden administration and you've got its left-wing operatives and apparatchiks, and they want to shut down the other side. And they especially want to shut down the other side, pre-election. So pre-election, we're not talking about the Biden administration. We're just talking about the left wants to shut down the other side, and they want to shut down the other side now that they are in power. But how do they do it? It's difficult for them, they know, to have open communication with digital platforms to censor people. And so someone in the Biden administration, or at least on the left, even before the Biden administration came up with an ingenious idea. And that is, even using government entities, using all these government agencies, and by the way, all government agencies are covered by the First Amendment. It's not as if when the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law, it's only Congress. It covers the executive branch and not just the White House. It covers everything that is represented by the federal government. So the federal government is constitutionally prohibited from engaging in censorship. That's the First Amendment. That's what it means. That's what it says. And these guys know that. And so here's their idea. And it's, you have to admit, it's kind of a, well, it's an idea like right out of Satan. right? What's the idea? What if we get left-wing nonprofits? Now, all of this is sounding eerily familiar to anyone who's seen 2,000 Mules. But what if we get left-wing nonprofits to be our intermediaries? We won't communicate with the digital platforms. We will tip off the left-wing nonprofits. They will then tip off the digital platforms, and the digital platforms will restrict, censor, ban the offenders on the right. So this is what has been going on. And John Solomon has the, as they say, has the receipts. He focuses really on four organizations, which I'm going to name. The Stanford Internet Observatory, called SIO. The University of Washington Center for an Informed Public. The Atlantic Council's DFR Lab. And an analytics firm called Graphica. Now, all these organizations wildly praised in the Washington Post, in the media. Why? Because they actually know that these organizations are doing the left's dirty business. But what is now being revealed is that these are organizations that are getting direct tip-offs from the administration in violation of the First Amendment. This is not even really a close case. Now, how does this all work? It works in the following loop. First of all, the Biden administration, and by the way, the Biden administration, in this case, assisted by some other left-wing groups. We're talking about groups like the NAACP and Common Cause. So the Biden administration and these groups are all filing what they call tickets with these so-called misinformation fighting left-wing entities. The left-wing nonprofits, in other words, say, we're going to be fighting disinformation. But what they don't reveal is that they're getting the government itself is telling them, ban this guy, ban that guy, remove this tweet. And essentially what these guys serve is they're the middleman, because then they contact the digital platforms. And let's remember, there's nothing in the Constitution to forbid nonprofit entities that are not part of the government communicating with digital platforms. That's legal. That's allowed. So this is a way of, like, call it doing an end run around the Constitution. But there's a further twist that I'll reveal in the next segment. It's not simply a matter where the Biden administration is telling these nonprofits to do this. They also pay them. And how do they pay them? By giving them grants. And so we'll see that each of these organizations get lavish funding from the Biden administration as a reward for essentially doing their censorship duties. So this is pure corruption. It's unconstitutional. It might even be criminal. So John Solomon is onto something really important here, and something Republicans need to pay careful attention to. Because again, this is not just a matter, we're going to take a look at it. You need to investigate, indict, and prosecute. So obviously a Republican Congress can't prosecute, but it can have hearings, collect the information, turn over that information, not necessarily to Merrick Garland. He's not going to do anything with it. Turn the information over to state attorneys generals who can move on it, get some of these people where they belong, it seems to me in this case, in handcuffs. You guys have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today. You've trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. And this is a guy who makes one great product after another. Now, on top of the special exclusively for my listeners on the Percale and Giza Dream Bread Sheets, by the way, marked down as low as $29.98, Mike is now changing the game with his three-piece towel set. Set is made with USA cotton, making it extremely absorbent, yet still providing that soft feel you look for in a towel. The set comes with one bath towel, one hand towel, one washcloth, now typically retailing for $49.99, but now for a limited time, you can get the three-piece towel set for the low price of $19.98 with promo code Dinesh. Don't miss out on these incredible offers. A limited supply. Please be sure to order now. Call 800-876-0227, or you can go to mypillow.com. Either way, you need to use promo code Dinesh. You've got up to 66% on the whole ensemble of products, but take advantage of it. Just don't forget to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H Dinesh. I'm continuing my discussion of investigative reporter John Solomon's bombshell report on the outsourcing of censorship by the Biden regime. I'm not going to hesitate to say it. They're acting like totalitarians. They don't really deserve to be called anything other than a regime. So they have an enemies list. And who's on that enemies list? This is what is kind of revealing, because the enemies list is now been disclosed. It's been uncovered. And here's who's on the list. I'm just going to read some of the names. Real James Woods, Gateway Pundit, Donald Trump Jr., Tom Fitton, Jack Posobiec, Eric Trump, Charlie Kirk, Mark Levin, James O'Keefe, Richard Grenell, Harmeet Dillon, Breitbart News, Robbie Starbuck. So you have this list. These are the bad guys from the point of view of these, of the Biden administration. They're also the bad guys from the point of view of these left-wing nonprofits. So they're working together to shut down the opposition. And let's remember, some of these guys, Robbie Starbuck was running for Congress. So you're talking about election interference. You're also talking about silencing important influencers in the days and weeks leading up to a presidential election. Think about this. And they don't hesitate to do this. So to look at some concrete examples, Marjorie Taylor Greene is also on the list. I'm a little disappointed I'm not on the list. Tuffy goes, no. But hey, I'm a little surprised I'm not on it. But nevertheless, to look at a couple of examples, they want to restrict Paul Gosar. Why? Because he's sharing Project Veritas videos about the Minnesota cash for ballot harvesting scheme. Hey, listen, here's some $300 and $200. We have a scene of this in 2000 Mules. And Mike Kelly, a representative Republican from Pennsylvania, is dangerous because he files a law against the state's mail-in voting law. This is a Republican from Pennsylvania. Notice that Pennsylvania is a critical state. So these guys are keeping a very close eye on, we need to win Pennsylvania. Let's go after this guy. He's challenging our mail-in voting law, and our mail-in voting law is critical to achieving the result we want. So this is all very eye-opening stuff. It turns out that there's a guy named Mike Benz, B-E-N-Z. He's a former State Department official. This is the guy who did the investigative research that he then turned over to John Solomon. So this gives you an idea when you have investigative reporting. It's not just that John Solomon goes out, finds out all the information. This information can be quite complex, and somebody has to get the information, extract it out of the government, be able to see the significance of it, then be able to go through it and identify what's really going on here, because these people do a lot to try to cover their tracks. Well, Mike Benz deserves credit. Apparently, he has a new organization called Foundation for Freedom Online. This is the guy that got the goods. And he says this. There are a couple of very interesting quotes from him that I want to relay. One, if you trace the chronology, he says, you will find there was 18 months work of institutional preparation to create this very apparatus that we now know played a significant role in the censorship of millions of posts for the 2020 election and has ambitious sights for 2022 and 2024. So the burning relevance of this is that this operation is still in effect. The Biden administration is going to continue, and is probably doing it as we speak, continue to feed information to this consortium of left-wing groups. Groups that, by the way, are also receiving bribery grants from the Biden administration. You do our work, and then mysteriously large amounts of money that weren't coming your way before begin to flow in your direction. Essentially, what Mike Benn says is he says that even though they shut down the Ministry of Truth, this is how they are carrying it out. He goes, amazingly, there are so many Ministry of Truth functionaries within the Department of Homeland Security. Representative Andrew Clyde of Georgia, Republican, is like, this is stunning. This has to be stopped. We have to have hearings on this post-November. He says, I'm drafting legislation called the Free Speech Defense Act that, quote, would prevent the federal government from labeling anything through a proxy entity, like a social media company, as disinformation, labeling it as misinformation, or even labeling it as true. So you think about it, the government has to have no role in this. The government is not allowed to manipulate, if you will, the free speech debate in America. They've got to stay out of it. And for the most part, in the past, they did. But now we have a left that is okay with censorship, that doesn't want to cross swords with its opposition, doesn't want to have a debate. Think how difficult it is to get any of these guys to debate me. If I could, I'd have them on the podcast all the time. I'm happy to engage one-on-one with my opponents. Debbie's like, you should bring someone. The other day we're talking about bringing someone who's an atheist, which I probably have more luck doing that than trying to find somebody who's on the left. So the left wants to shut us down. This is a really devious scheme that they have been employing sub rosa or in an underground way to carry this out. All kudos to Mike Benz and John Solomon for exposing it. But exposition is only the first part of reform. Exposition needs to be followed by, if necessary, prosecution, certainly by investigation. Most importantly, this shenanigan has got to be stopped. What some of us would do just to be young again, the simple things like climbing stairs, getting out of bed, taking a walk, aren't that simple always. Too many aches and pains, but they can be, because thankfully now there's a 100% drug-free solution to the aches and pains. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor love it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie's a fan. She can finally do the exercises she loves, like planks, push-ups, even a stationary bike, all thanks to Relief Factor. It's been a game changer for her and for so many people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246. So go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. Debbie and I are here for our Friday roundup, and I'd like to start by talking a little bit about Elon Musk and Twitter. I was a little surprised. It seemed like Elon Musk was pulling away from the Twitter deal. It's almost like he had regrets. Some people thought he was trying to negotiate to get it for a better deal. And then suddenly, almost unexpectedly, Elon Musk turned around and goes, I'll buy Twitter. I'm going to buy it for the price we talked about, we agreed on. And it looks like this is now going through. It's not like it's without obstacles, but it looks like it's going to happen, which means that we will have a free speech guy in charge of Twitter. And that alone is exhilarating. I mean, that's really good news. I'm thrilled this is actually happening. And a good day for free speech in America.
I mean, it really is. But what it's really telling that we have to have someone that gets it to buy a platform like this so that we can have free speech. I mean, it's so ridiculous. You know, when I was fighting about free speech in Venezuela and all of those things, I would always talk about, well, you know, in America, we have free speech. Now, I'm not so sure. And so it really is telling that you have to have a gazillionaire, you know, buy a platform like Twitter to do that, because really it should be, these platforms should be a debate. I'm not saying that I want for him to have a right-wing platform. In fact, that would be kind of hypocritical of us to say, right? But we need to have a platform where we can all discuss our ideas, our opinions without being canceled.
This is really what the platforms promised when they went begging for federal protection. This is what they said they would be. They all made proclamations about a free and open public square. So it's really interesting to me how, you know, Silicon Valley had a libertarian thrust. And I thought to myself, how did these libertarians, who at least came out of the gate strong believers in freedom, get sort of seduced and corrupted by the left? I think the reason that happened is because libertarianism by itself doesn't stand on anything. It stands on freedom, yes, but the moment you say I'm standing on freedom, the question becomes freedom for what? And then the left
who's
comes
freedom?
Yeah, and so if you want, these libertarians often like to live in a leftist social world. And then the left comes along and says, yeah, but do you mean freedom to hurt people? Do you mean freedom to say hateful things? And then these guys are like, well, I guess not. No. Perhaps I make an exception over here, make an exception over there. And suddenly they've basically allowed a substantive agenda. I won't say a moral agenda. It's really an immoral agenda in many regards, to torpedo the freedom that was supposed to be the foundation of the whole thing. It's another way of saying that the only way to fight the left is not with a commitment to sort of procedures and freedom, no values. You actually need conservative values to defeat progressive values.
Yeah. And another thing, though, you know, to talk about those Silicon Valley guys is they want to be cool. And maybe our side and our free speech arena, maybe it's not cool enough for them. You know, they themselves don't want to be canceled. So they have to be on the side of the uncancelable, right? So this is, and it goes back to your secret censors that you were talking about in the last two segments. And that is that they take part in this, even if they're not ideologically on the left, they sort of kind of become that way, kind of like Bezos even, you know, he's a free market guy, but yet he wants to be cool. You know, he doesn't want to be canceled himself. So
this is really, I think, where we have to commend Musk. And now people will say, well, yeah, when you have $200 billion, you can, you know, but interestingly, Jeff Bezos is the second richest man and he wants to be cool. So he has that insecurity.
Yeah. And then look at what happened to Trump, you know, for not being quote unquote cool, even though he was cool before.
Right.
Right. So these guys kind of know that if they walk that line and if they really side with truth, they may not be cool after all. You know?
I mean, Musk must be noticing because he's on Twitter a lot. He's probably noticing the kind of the freak out that the left is having over his impending takeover of the platform. Yeah. I just hope that he doesn't allow himself somehow to be cajoled or bullied because they're going to offer him the moon, culturally speaking.
Not only that, but they're going to come out with more stories, you know, like they did during when he first started the...
It's like, this is your life if you cross us.
Oh, yeah.
And so you would do better to fall into line. But Musk has the, well, let's call it the muscle, the muscle, to be able to push back on these guys and literally tell them to go get a life. You're not going to get to be able to silence your opponents, not in America. And probably the reason you want to do that is you're afraid your arguments stink. You can't survive in an open combat of ideas. That's why you're trying to shut your opponents down. It's not that they're triggering you. They're outwitting you. They're smarter than you. Even though you outnumber them, even though you have the big megaphones, they have the better content. That's where the censorious impulse comes out. Wouldn't be nice if I can shut down my opponent. So kudos to Elon Musk for maintaining, at least so far, this strong commitment to free speech. And it's just going to be fun to see that on Twitter again.
I'm going to love it. Tweet away.
Homeowners, beware. You could already be the victim of home title theft and not have a clue. Some cyber thief may have already forged his name onto the title to your home. Here's how you find out. My partners at Home Title Lock have a special free offer for my listeners. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and simply enter your address for your free, no-obligation home title scan. This is how you discover if a cyber thief is already camping on your home's title. Look, the title to your home is the only document that proves you own it. And once he forges your title, he can take out loans on your home or forge your name stating he's the new owner. First things first, let's make sure your home's title is securely in your name. You can do that now by going to HomeTitleLock.com. Use my promo code RADIO, then enter your address for your free, no-obligation home title scan. That's $100 value free. Again, that's HomeTitleLock.com, code RADIO, HomeTitleLock.com, code RADIO. I talked earlier this week about Biden's prisoner exchange with Venezuela. And of course, I felt a little silly doing it because I didn't have the Venezuelan to weigh in on that. And you know, Debbie was, actually, I don't think you were at the podcast that day.
I wasn't. I was waiting for a FedEx package that never came. Yeah. Two days of staying home from the podcast because I had to sign for this.
Debbie even did a stinging tweet about FedEx, basically saying, wait a minute, you used to be a great company. What happened? Why is it the case now that when you say, remember the old FedEx ads?
And the thing about this particular package is that, you know, if it says it's coming on a certain day and it doesn't come, okay, well, it'll come. But I had to sign for it. So I had to be home, right? So this is annoying. FedEx.
Anyway, I came on the podcast. I talked about the Venezuela exchange and what do you make of it? Biden's getting some credit from the families.
Right, of course. And the only people that benefit from this exchange are the families because America certainly doesn't benefit from it. And of course Venezuela does. And
doesn't. The Venezuelans don't.
Not the Venezuelans. The regime.
The regime.
The illegitimate regime. And make no mistake, it is an illegitimate regime. Okay, I'm saying it right now. And so I predicted this before the election, before 2020. I said, if Biden wins the presidency, the Maduro situation is going to, it's going to be open season. All of the sanctions are going to be, you know, dismissed. They're going to do whatever they want to do because that's the way regimes
well,
act.
Well, interestingly, the Biden people, they do not like to be called illegitimate in any way.
No, of course not.
But it's interesting their kinship with Venezuela because suddenly they're like, we're going to start dissolving the sanctions.
Oh, of course. So, and I predicted that because that is what happens with a leftist regime in America, liberals that don't know how to resolve issues in foreign policy. And, you know, and I even talked about the Bergdahl exchange. What came of that? Well, what came of that, the result of that, was the Afghanistan fiasco. Because that wouldn't have happened if those prisoners that were exchanged for Bergdahl wouldn't be back in Afghanistan doing shenanigans like they were.
I mean, five-season Taliban commanders released by Obama, supposedly detained temporarily in the Middle East, but pretty soon they're all back in the field. And not just in the field as combatants, they were that, but also in the government.
Right.
These are obviously people of political influence who are now part of the Taliban regime. They were the ones who were celebrating the fall of Kabul. And I'm sure Obama was looking now. The interesting thing is, what was his reaction? I'll tell you his reaction. He was thrilled with what he did.
I'm sure he was. And now the exchange it's the Sitko 5. And then there is one more guy and then a Marine from America that was in there since 2020. And he was tortured and it was horrible. And in fact, his mom was going to come on the podcast and she was just too distraught to do it. So it was a very sad situation. But the exchange was with two of Maduro's criminal nephews, two of them, criminal nephews, and make no bones about it, these guys are bad guys, really bad guys. And so Maduro keeps doing what he wants to do. He doesn't care. America's never going to do anything to him, going to keep him in power for however long he lives. And meanwhile, Venezuela is still starving. And the regime keeps getting richer and richer. And so
now, most recently, Biden has been talking about lowering the sanctions on Venezuela to allow Chevron to pump some Venezuelan oil. But think about that. Biden doesn't want to pump our own oil. Mm-hmm. He wants to pump Venezuelan oil because it props up and shores up and strengthens the Venezuelan regime. He also puts U.S. dollars into Venezuela because if we buy that oil, they get American money in exchange for it. So look at the way you notice that when leftists come to power in the United States, they want to make friends with Iran. Let's do the Iran deal. They want to soften the blow on Cuba and Venezuela.
With the enemies.
They have a track record
and they operate
within a blueprint.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not gonna end well. I don't really know what will happen with OPEC and everything, but it's really bad. It's a really bad situation. And the only people that were happy about it were the family members of these poor men that were tortured for so long. In solitary confinement in horrific conditions in Venezuela. But as I've said before, these exchanges are not a good thing for us.
Well, I think the broader point you're making, which is very true and hasn't been made by others, at least I haven't seen it, is the idea that this isn't just an exchange. It isn't you give me one guy, I'll give you one guy. There are larger ramifications, and the beauty of the Bergdahl analogy is it clearly demonstrates the way in which this was not just about, it was a bad deal on its face. Why would you take one deserter, one guy who hates the U.S. military and likes the Taliban? We want that guy back, Bergdahl. We'll give you five seasoned Taliban commanders in return. But it's look at what those guys go on to do on the battlefield and the effect of it that we're living with even till now. I'm not exactly a super fan of the flavor of a lot of veggies, but I have to admit when I'm in the produce section, even those veggies, along with other fruits and vegetables, look really good, vibrant colors everywhere. Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors you see in the produce section equal nutritional variety. Different colors signify different key nutrients, so if you eat only your favorite one or two veggies, well, you're missing a whole world of vital nutrients. This is why Debbie and I take these six little fruits and veggie capsules each day. Each Daily Dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31. Variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. For a limited time, all new preferred customers will receive an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. I've been talking, and I did quite a bit yesterday, about Herschel Walker and the Herschel Walker controversy. And when we talk about it at home, Debbie goes, well, I've got a little bit of a different angle on it than you do. And I thought this would be great to air on the podcast. So let me kick this off by reading a couple of lines from Christian Walker, whom we both know and we both really like. I know my mom and I would really appreciate if my father, Herschel Walker, stopped lying and making a mockery of us. You're not a, quote, family man when you left us to bang a bunch of women, threatened to kill us, had us move over 6 times in 6 months running from your violence. I mean, this is damaging stuff coming from your own kid. But it's part of a larger picture. I mean, just to make one point about it, when Christian Walker talks about moving 6 times in 6 months, Christian Walker was at this time a baby or an infant. He wasn't mature enough to be seeing what was happening or making a kind of adult evaluation of it. He is now in his 20s. All of this occurred a long time ago, and I made the point before in the podcast. Obviously, a good deal of it comes from his mom. It's not to say that Christian, as he gets older, isn't in a position to be able to look and see what's going on. But what do you, this is obviously a sad, but also politically an explosive and potentially very damaging situation.
It could be a very damaging situation. And I've kind of gone back and forth. I was like, well, you know, do we really want someone with this kind of integrity, this or lack of integrity or this kind of, you know, bad image or whatever? Do we really want him representing us? But then I saw the video of what is it, Warnock's?
Oh, it's Warnock.
Warnock's wife.
This is from 2020.
Okay, where she's saying that Warnock is an abuser. He beats her, you know, all this stuff.
He now, neglects the
he
kids.
He neglects the kids.
And he's a liar. I mean, the thing that was so telling about, in 1 minute, in 60 seconds, she basically said, this man, Raphael Warnock, that you see, is an actor.
Yes.
He's a really good actor, yes. She says. He knows how to put on a show, but that's not the real guy.
Right, and he's supposedly a pastor. So if he's a pastor and he's like this, you know, Walker's not a pastor.
Well, we've got to remember that we know, it's funny because the left is like, you know, we have Herschel Walker, the abuser, and on the other hand, we have a pastor. First of all, you know, if we're gonna put some truths on the table, the simple fact of it is, in the African American church, there are a lot of promiscuous pastors. I'm not saying they're the only promiscuous pastors, but there's a lot of promiscuity going on at the level of the pastor in those churches. So this whole idea that somehow, you know, this guy has a halo, he's living the upright life.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Nonsense. It doesn't even matter if he's a pastor or not a pastor. I guess what I'm trying to say is I was really looking at the whole, you know, Herschel Walker situation and going, oh my God, do we really want this guy? But then, on the other hand, the other guy on the other team that's running against him is horrible, and he's a leftist socialist. So if I'm going to go vote for somebody, I'm not going to vote for the leftist socialist horrible man. You know what I mean? So I'm just saying, if all things are equal,
it's not a good guy who's a leftist against a bad guy who's a conservative. Not at all. Look, I mean, let's look at what the job is, right? What's the job of a senator? A senator is not even like a governor. A governor runs a state. A governor has a lot of administrative responsibility. Senators do one thing. They show up, they debate, and they vote. That's what they do. Same as congressmen. Their job is to vote. And so let's look at the Herschel Walker voting versus the Raphael Warnock. Somehow you have a red state, which has got Warnock, mm-hmm. who almost by some accident found himself in there. Mm-hmm. And the point is, we don't want to keep him in there, do we?
Right, we don't. And look, I really feel for Christian Walker. My father was also a philanderer. And it did end in a very tragic situation where they divorced when I was very young.
That's how you came to America, in a weird way.
That's how I came to America, yes. And so I really do feel for Christian because I know what it's like to have a father that does that. But at the same time, in this situation, in the time we find ourselves in, we want a country that that is not going to go the way of my home country, right? And so we have to just keep things in perspective. While I really feel badly for him, I really don't want Herschel Walker to lose this election.
I mean, I see the left's playbook here. This is a playbook they've tried with Clarence Thomas. This is a playbook they've tried with Trump, with Kavanaugh. They don't care about the truth. I'm not even sure that half of this stuff or any of it, to be honest, being said about Herschel Walker is true. We have a note card signed with the distinctive H signature that he uses. It's so easy to trace that. Big deal. How do we know that's even really his signature? He says it isn't. He says, so what we're getting at here is we are so eager, and often our premise on the right is to accept the premise of the other side and then evaluate. Yeah. What should we do in this awkward situation? Yeah. As opposed to you're releasing this information in your familiar bombshell style 30 days before the election because you know there's not enough time to fully process the facts.
And not to mention their candidate.
Their candidate is being covered look for media reports on Raphael Warnock's wife. You won't find them. You got to go back and dig and search in 2020.
Exactly.
So the media covers for one guy and they're launching systematic hits on the other guy in the expectation that we would be dumb enough to fall for it. If you want to know what the left's real plan is for your kids, just look at the reaction to the work that Patriot Mobile did in multiple school districts in Texas. The left is losing their minds. Well, Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative mobile phone provider and a force for conservative values. This is because they take a portion of your bill and fund conservative causes and candidates who believe in the sanctity of life, freedom of speech, the Second Amendment, and they're winning. Patriot Mobile has affordable plans for you, your family, even your business. They offer the same nationwide coverage as the major carriers because they use multiple major networks. Plus, you're supporting conservative values with every call. Go to patriotmobile.com/Dinesh or call 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation with the offer code Dinesh. That's D-I-N-E-S-H. Special discounts are also available for veterans and first responders. Join our movement. Make the switch today and a difference tomorrow. The site is patriotmobile.com/Dinesh, patriotmobile.com/Dinesh, or call 972-PATRIOT. I saw a very interesting study that had me sort of not only chuckling, but I thought, I got to have Debbie on. We got to talk about this jointly in a segment because the study was conducted by a very reputable guy. This is Brad Wilcox, along with his associate, Elise Elhage. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Virginia. He's editor of a journal called Family Studies. He's a prominent scholar in academia, very well respected. And his study is really simple. Who are the happiest people in America? Now, he begins the study by saying, and I'll relay the study in brief, and then I want Debbie to kind of weigh in on it. He basically goes, we're told everywhere marriage is an outdated institution, particularly for women. There are always profiles, and he points to one from Bloomberg saying that women who stay single and don't have kids, you know, they earn high incomes. Their per capita income is going up. Then he goes, the message we get from the media that marriage is bad and marriage is especially bad for women, could not be more contradicted by the facts. And he goes on to conduct this survey asking basically who are the happiest people in America, who are the most prosperous, who have the most self-satisfaction with their life as reported by themselves. And it turns out, that married women, and he'll go on in the study to say married conservative women in particular are the happiest people in America. First of all, he shows that married mothers ages 18 to 55 have a mean household income of $133,000. Why? Because obviously we're talking about the mother. She may or may not be working, but either way, when you're looking at the household income, $133,000. For women who are single, childless single women, 18 to 55, $79,000. So basically half. So they're not they're financially less prosperous. And number two, 33% of married moms ages 18 to 55 say they are, quote, completely satisfied with their lives compared to 15% of single childless women.
Wow.
So what do you make of
that? Oh, I know why.
Let's talk about why.
Yeah. So I think when a woman doesn't ever marry, okay, like I'm saying, I'm going to put it, you know, 40 plus, right, and unmarried. A lot of times it's because number one, you're extremely picky. You want, you know, Prince Charming, you have a checklist. You have a checklist. Nobody meets it. And so you're a very demanding kind of person. So I think people that are that way, women that are that way, are just they're just unsettled in their ability to be satisfied with anything. And so I don't see it as a surprise that just because they're single, right, means that maybe they're just never satisfied with anything or anyone. So it doesn't surprise me.
I think they bring a vibe to men that essentially says, what have you got to offer?
Yeah.
And they're not self-conscious. In other words, the question never occurs to them, what do you have to offer? In other words, what are you bringing to the table? What makes you so great? Yeah, you have this long checklist. How would you like it if some man took out his checklist and started checking you against it?
Now, did this article also talk about the fact that a lot of the conservative married women are very religious?
Well, it talks about the fact that...
Because that, I think, has a lot to do with it. When you know that there's a higher power that takes away your worries, you know, when you're just feeling down and out, you really do rely on that spiritual guide. And these single women probably are atheists or non-religious. And so that could also play a role.
Well, the author concludes, I'm not quoting him, giving of ourselves to others, especially to our spouse, our kids, our community, and I think he would extend the point to faith. You're finding meaning in life and you're finding meaning in others, whether it's a higher power, whether it's the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly, even married liberal women with children are not as happy as married conservative women with children.
Yeah.
So this is what I like about the study is it blows up the leftist narrative like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
Why? It shows that the truth is the exact opposite of what they're saying. It's not just that what they're saying isn't true. It's that it is the opposite of the truth. The truth lies in the very direction that they're trying to, quote, run away from.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing, too, is that we are always blamed that we're very judgmental people. But in truth, I believe it's the exact opposite. And I think when you are constantly judging people and you're constantly belittling people and not wanting to accept their belief system or what, you know, it not only does it break friendships, but it also makes you really miserable inside as a person. And so I think, you know, I love this.
I mean, there are so many corrupt academic studies. Here's a solid one that comes to, I think, it's an academic study that validates common sense. Common sense would tell you that, hey, if you're in a family, you've got a spouse to go through life with, you've got kids who are going to not only look up to you, you can educate them, they will at some point take your place. All of this offers benefits, emotional benefits, spiritual benefits that you're not going to get if you're sitting in your own apartment all by yourself. It's obvious. And yet it's good to see academic research corroborating the point. I'm going to conclude my discussion of Odysseus in the Land of the Dead, the so-called Nekoia, by closing out with Odysseus's encounter, very brief, almost ephemeral, quick passing encounter with Hercules, the greatest of the Greek heroes. Hercules is sort of stands above. And of course, Hercules himself had made a journey to the underworld. He had made a journey to the underworld to bring back Cerberus. So here is Hercules, and now, of course, Hercules is dead. He's in the underworld, and he's the last guy that Odysseus encounters before Odysseus is essentially overwhelmed, stricken with a kind of fear about staying in the underworld. I mean, here you are among the dead. You're not dead. So here's Odysseus, by the way, inhabiting that middle space between life and death. And interestingly, we can see the Nekoia as a way for Odysseus to be detached ultimately from his past, because he sees figures here from his past. He sees Achilles, he sees Agamemnon, he sees Ajax, all figures from the Iliad. This is the way of sort of leaving that past behind. And Odysseus here is going to look forward to his future, because after this, we will see Odysseus making his way home to Ithaca and dealing with the serious problems that await him there. Now, when Odysseus sees Heracles, Heracles immediately recognizes him. And this itself is significant. One great hero, the greatest of the heroes, recognizing Odysseus immediately, and therefore, in a sense, elevating Odysseus also to the top ranks of Greek heroes. And then, says Heracles, Odysseus, master of every circumstance. He's praising Odysseus. You are a master of dealing with whatever situation you find yourself in. So you are also tortured by the weight of fortune, as I was when I lived beneath the sun. Hercules says to Odysseus, in effect, you're a bit like me. I had these ordeals, these famous so-called labors of Hercules, and you have had your adventures, your labors to bring you to this point. And so our fates run parallel. And that's all he says. And then Hercules moves away. But let's think of what has been accomplished here. In this very short exchange, suddenly we find Odysseus standing, you may say, shoulder to shoulder with the greatest of the Greek heroes, and the greatest of the Greek heroes himself, Hercules, taking the initiative to speak. Odysseus doesn't actually say anything. It's Hercules who basically says to Odysseus, you're like me. We've had sort of a similar path. And I want to have us come back to the question. Let's remember what's going on. Let's back up. Let's take the big view. Odysseus is narrating his adventures in the underworld to the Phaeacians. And think of the effect on the Phaeacians when they hear that, first of all, not only do you have a guy, Odysseus, by the way, a guy who's known from the Trojan Horse and the Trojan War, and here he is in the underworld, and he's obviously made it out alive because he's sitting here with us, the Phaeacians. But now we hear that he met the greatest of the Greek heroes, and the greatest of Greek heroes compared his own situation to Odysseus. So all of this has the effect of elevating, of magnifying Odysseus. And let's remember Odysseus's objective. It is to build in the Phaeacians a desire, an enthusiasm to help him to get home to Ithaca. And so one can now look back. We've covered four books. This is really all the way from books 9 through 12. And we are in the kind of flashback of Odysseus's adventures. His adventures with the last Dragonians, the giants, his adventures with the Cyclopes, his adventures with Aeolus, the king of the winds. And so now the Nequia, the underworld. And so think of the kind of knockout impact that Odysseus is having on the Phaeacians. And yet there's a lingering question that I think Homer himself is planting in our mind that we need to think about, and that is any of this even true? All of it, let's remember, has been all of the adventures of Odysseus, the flashback, is narrated by Odysseus. And now, it is the case that Odysseus didn't make it all up. There are some scholars, very few, who think that maybe Odysseus just conjured the whole thing out of his imagination in order to have this desired effect on the Phaeacians. But we know that that's really not true, because there are, early in the narrative, Homer himself talks about Odysseus among the Cyclopes. He talks about Odysseus on the island of Calypso. So here you have the omniscient narrator corroborating the narrative of Odysseus. But it should not escape our attention that Odysseus not so much elaborated or made up stuff, but rather foregrounded certain things in the narrative. I want you to focus on this. I don't want you to focus on that. Let's not focus entirely on what I was doing when my men were lost. Let's focus totally on what they did that was so foolish that caused Zeus to strike them with a thunderbolt. So here's Odysseus, in a sense, crafting his narrative. And let's remember that Homer's doing that too. That's the Odyssey. Homer crafts his narrative. He begins where he wants to begin. He then moves the narrative in the way that he wants, and he ends where he wants to end. So this is what bards do. And so Odysseus, in this part of the narrative, is sort of playing a bard. Odysseus is sort of telling his story in the same way that his story is embedded inside of Homer's story. And that double effect gives us an idea of what narratives do. And what narratives, and how narratives are crafted to the effect that they are intended to achieve on their intended audience.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.